Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Everybody's Drew Waters talking to Chris Gordon on Hellblazer Bids.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, and good night, wherever you are in the world. This is Chris Gordon on Hellblazer Biz, and as you can see, and as you've heard, I am in the company of the esteemed actor, Drew Waters. Hey, Drew. Thanks for joining
me. Hey, everybody. Thanks for having me.
No, I appreciate you coming on. It's, I think, a mutual friend of ours, Rick, pointed me in your direction.
Rick Perez. Oh, yeah, Rick Perez. He's been killing it. His career has been on an uphill climb for the last couple of years.
Yeah, he's doing really well. He's fantastic. I got him on here for Cobra Kai last year sometime, and I've been friends with him since. He's a tough sound guy as well, which you all are. This is what I love about talking to people like you. You're really down to earth, and you're so friendly and welcoming.
Yeah, I appreciate it. It's easy when you have good company, so.
Thank you. I'll take that as a compliment. we're here to, I mean, you know, you've got a huge list of credits to your name anyway, but obviously we're here to talk about, you've got a new film coming out, I know, which is Desperate Riders, which we'll get into. And there's also a TV show as well, which you have been filming. I'm not sure how much you'd be able to talk about that, but we'll try and get into it. But obviously your past career as well. So, I mean, you've been on some shows, which are like my top favorites of all time, like Bones, NCIS, LA, everything like that. So, I mean, I'm going to start by going right back in that time. So with Bones, what was it like interacting with those guys? Because that just seemed like a fun set to be on.
It really was, especially my character. It's funny, my career's been a Top Show guest star for the last probably 12 years. And so I get to play these really fun characters for a week run. And that cast, knowing that cast and stuff, they love the dynamics of characters, and they love pushing boundaries and buttons within them. And so you always got to stay on your toes with them. And I was playing, I think we were doing a putt-putt golf tournament of all things. It was like the world champion of putt-putt golf tournament. We took it very, 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 very serious. And so, you know, Bones, the character and stuff, he came up to me and he was just pushing the buttons all day. It just challenges you, you know, and so you just turn around and push it back and build the character even more and add more layers to it.
Fantastic. I love how you call it putt-putt golf. We call it crazy golf over here. It did take me a while to figure out what it was when people were talking about putt-putt golf on TV shows. I was like, what's that? And then I realized it's just crazy golf.
Okay, so I really think it is a gentleman's way of challenging your in-laws, especially your father-in-law. Yeah. You're married, man, you know, your father-in-law, and you hit football, it gets serious.
Oh yeah. You get those rivalries straight in there, like you're saying.
Yeah.
I never mind the father-in-law, me and my wife, we're bad enough when we're on. When my son comes on and that's it. It's like my son doesn't stand a chance. It's like, right, this is war, kid.
Well, the problem is me and my wife get on there, so I said, I bet you I can get it to the next hole in one stroke. And so then you gotta go over the dinosaur, through the water, skip across the city.
Well, we've got it on the PS now. So we play it on the PS or the Xbox, I can't remember which one it is. But we play it on there, and my son's the same. He's like, you know, me and my wife, we try to take it seriously, go the proper way. He's like turning the ball straight away, trick shot straight over. And he's like, right, okay, so that's all we do now. We do the same thing. It's like, just trick shot it across and try and get a hole in one.
You don't take putt-putts seriously. That's why it's indestructible.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. You just throw it all over the place, but do whatever you can to try and get a hole in one. The amount of times I've actually landed on someone else's holes, that sounds wrong. The amount of times I've... Okay, the amount of times I've whacked a ball and it's gone somewhere on someone else's course, I'll put it that way. But that's what they say, that's what it's there for. So obviously Bones, NCIS LA as well, those guys, they're more, I think they seem fun, but it's a much more serious type of show, with obviously the cop drama and stuff like that. But you got L Cool J on there, and you know, and Chris as well.
Again, let me tell you something. Al and Chris are professionals when it comes down to their craft. But the funny thing about NCIS, I've done NCIS, NCIS New Orleans, and NCIS LA, right? And NCIS and NCIS New Orleans, I played a bad guy. And NCIS LA, I played an FBI agent. And so the crossover was very unique. I'm trying to get on NCIS Hawaii right now. I need a tent, as you can see. So I figured I'd get out there and give me some stuff.
Yeah, get the broad spectrum going. So I mean, that must be quite difficult. Well, not difficult in a way, but pretty cool though, to get across the whole franchise of the three different shows.
Because I mean, NCIS is one of the longest running shows on network right now, and it's still going. And so to be a part of that and the history behind it, and then being able to go to each one of them, it's just. Because you're playing a different character in each one of them. So you get to have this opportunity to just, it's very unique and interesting and seeing how everybody else plays their characters and the transformation that you create within yours as you're going into the next, you know, NCIS LA or, you know, whichever one, because it always changes and the franchise is different. It's the same, but it's different.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I've got to say, I've not really much watched the original NCIS because I've got to get my wife into these things. And, you know, it's been there for a while. There's one on the backlog to try and get, you know, binge watch and catch up. But NCIS, yeah. We love anyway. And I've got to say, partially probably because of Daniela.
It's funny, I'm ex-Navy. So, you know, NCIS is right up my alley. It was great.
Fantastic. Yeah. So you kind of know exactly who they are and fear them.
Like, oh, you're that guy.
Yeah. Yeah, it's funny. They seem to have a reputation. They're really good at their job, but yeah, they have the reputation. They're the ones who come around and knock on the door in the middle of the night. Excuse me, sir. Been drinking too much. Yeah.
Yeah, I spent my whole career avoiding it, so.
Fair enough. So I mean, as well, obviously, so kind of, I mean, I'll say there are many, many shows. I'm not going to go into each one for you, but what's your best experiences? Because I mean, I'll change that sentence to how have you found you've evolved yourself as an actor from all the different experiences that we've had? Because you, like you say, you've had like 12 years of being a guest on recent on the top shows pretty much out there at the moment. So how have you found that as involving yourself?
I tell you, man, it's what's been interesting about it is growing on set. You know, Friday Night Lights was my biggest growth because it was the most challenging in the sense that we ad-libbed a lot and you had to listen. You were forced to listen and respond in the proper tone and direction. And so Kyle Chandler and Connie and you know, cast like that were Taylor Kitsch and Jesse Plemons. I'm working with him right now on Love and Death, and Brad Leland. I'm working with him again. It's all come full circle and getting to hang out with them and seeing how they approach being comfortable and okay with mistakes and just moving the dialogue forward and the storyline forward and allowing those mistakes to live within it really helped me a lot. And then that allowed me to become very comfortable. And that way, when I hit Breaking Bad, it was, you know, Breaking Bad, rightly so, the writing on it was amazing. The creative behind it was just incredible. But it also gave me the confidence to go ahead, if it felt right, do it. And let them decide whether or not to allow me to continue to do it or say no. Because it was, you know, it's always a chance of last suck. Go back to the script. What are you? You trying something? What are you trying? Huh? You trying to change the show? Here, it's perfect. We got that chance. And so we're going to avoid that.
Yeah.
But I remember we were sitting there playing around on Breaking Bad, and the writer comes up to me for that episode, comes up to me, he goes, I like it. I like it. Keep it up. Looks good. Sounds good. No, I like what you're doing there. Keep it up. I said, okay. Had a good time.
Fantastic. That sounds great. I love it when you can ad lib as well. I'll always say this story because it's amazing. Erin Burns came on once and she'd done a film called Cell. With Samuel Jackson. And there was a scene in it where her brother had been killed. and she was going to go back. And I just love how you, as actors, you're so honed in your craft that you know what other people are thinking, you know what you've been with each other, you know what people are thinking on set. Because I think she was walking away and she thought, no, my character, she, on the spur of the moment, she thought my character would want to turn back and see her brother one last time. She turned, she said she turned around and felt this big, powerful arm on her. And it was Samuel Jackson. And he was like, no. And he turned her around to say, you know, you don't want to look at, you don't want to remember him like that. And just turned him, turned and walked away. And it kept, that kept in the actual end credit, in the end, in the end cut, should I say, because it was just, you know, so good. And I just love hearing when you do ad lib and you're allowed to do that. You've got that freedom of expression where you can just nurture your own, your characters up like that and think, you know, on the spot, well, actually might just say this right now and see how it goes. And then they let you
I think that's the biggest thing though. You're chasing down honesty. You know, it's not within yourself, but within the character. And sometimes it comes from you personally and stuff. Sometimes it comes from the world that you build and create. Sometimes it comes from the atmosphere that it, that you're in at that moment. But it's kind of do your homework ahead of time, understand and know everything, and then throw it away and forget about it. Show up and be a part of that world. Be in that moment. And it, the funny thing about us is that in the audience, because I'm a consumer watching this product, the products as well. The funny thing about it is we can always tell when it's an afterthought, when you stop yourself from wanting to do something because it doesn't come off genuine. And that's when the mistakes start happening. But if you allow yourself just to be organic and take that opportunity, because you can always rerun it and, you know, do it again. But it's take that moment because you never know. And it could be amazing. And most times, 9 times out of 10, they are.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. I can't really answer that. It just sounds, I'm not even going to attempt to try and respond. That's apart from saying that sounds really good. And the fact that, you know, it does just roll with it. There are, I'm sure there are times when it doesn't work quite often as well.
I rolled out of Friday Night Lights and, you know, we went from, you know, 30-35% ad libbed on Friday Night Lights to I went to a movie called Wire to Blood with Robson Green, and I was a co-lead with him. Mm-hmm. And it was the creators and writers of Law and Order, Criminal Intent.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
They wanted everything said. I mean, every A and B and all that said. And we had this, it was probably a 100-yard dolly track coming out of the capital of Austin, Texas. And it's a walk and talk. And I have maybe 3.5 pages of dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
And Robson has 13 pages of dialogue.
Yeah.
And he says all his, and it's a oneer. They want to do it in a oneer. He says all his. And I say all mine. And they cut. And I remember the script supervisor came up to me and goes, hey, Drew, you missed the A. And I went, what?
Oh, my God.
You missed the A. I went, are you serious? We're doing this again? I went to Robson. I was like, I am so sorry, man. I'm so sorry.
Oh, wow.
13 pages of just.
Yeah.
And they wanted every, which is understandable.
Oh, my gosh.
I mean, that's our job, but
yeah, there's pedantic and then there's pedantic. I think it's like, but he must have been listening really. For him, obviously, as a script, that's his job. So to listen to that intently, that he realized he missed one little tiny one digit word of A. that's intense.
Yeah, so, I'm thinking that's really good for me.
yeah, 3.5 pages. You normally make up the other five. You know.
Oh my god.
What was Robson like? I've interviewed his. I remember Robson from when they did. This is a long time ago now. Him and Jerome Flynn, they did a thing called Soldier, which was like a military drama way back when. And I interviewed Jerome, his partner from there, a couple of years back when he was on Game of Thrones as Bron. And we did talk about Robson a bit there. So what's he like now? Because obviously that was...
I haven't spoken to him probably in about 8-9 years now. But back then, he was great. Hollywood wanted him really bad, and he just did not want to go to Hollywood.
Yeah,
he was really set up in his ways. I know he, after that show, he did a few other shows, and then he had a fishing series.
Yeah, he does. He's still got that. Somewhere. Yeah, that's right. He's still got that, yeah.
Which I was like, okay. transition. You're just going to go that direction.
yeah, exactly. Gone from dramas, actions, and proper TV just to going out on a boat and fishing and making documentaries. Yeah, exactly. He makes money from it doing this, something he enjoys doing. So I guess. But yeah, they did bring an album out, which got rid. It was highly not controversial. Him and Jerome Flynn brought out one singing all the old wartime songs and stuff like that at one point, and it was. I used to have the album. It was all right. It was just.
I didn't know that.
I'll try and track down the name of it. It's just called Robson and Jerome, they were called. And all the, the Nightingale sang in Berkeley Square and stuff like that.
If you find that link, you got to send it to me.
Yeah. I think I did rib Jerome about it when we spoke on the phone.
That's hilarious.
I don't think they're that proud of it, but it might not be on their top list.
Was that shit again? Oh, God, no.
It's pretty much what Jerome said when I said to him. But everyone remembers him for it. I mean, so, obviously kind of what's, you've had lots of different experiences as well. So what's the kind of best one you've had when you've been sort of on set? I mean, it's probably really hard to say because they're probably all individually uniquely special.
Well, I think the beautiful thing, they really are. And they're all unique and special in their own way. It's fun because the more I've been doing it for 18 years now and mm-hmm. each show, I usually run into one or two different people, whether it's crew or cast that I've worked on in the past. And it's always fun to re-collaborate with them and see where they're at in their career and where I'm at in my career and just the comfort level and just the camaraderie and collaboration of being on set with them again. I think that's what I enjoy the most. It's the opportunity to revisit some friends, and now you're creating you're in a new environment, creating new characters and interacting with it and stuff, but mm-hmm. you never forgot where you met and came from. So you just were picked right back up where you left off.
Yeah.
And to me, those are the fun moments. They really are.
Excellent. Excellent. And I mean, the other thing as well, cause you're not just in front of the camera, you are behind the camera as well. And I know you do a lot of those. Yeah. You've had quite a few. Christmas on the Range, I'll name as one, but there's several films out there that you've been a part of from behind the camera as well. So how have you found that experience transitioning from the front to the, from being the one being filmed to the one behind the scenes, calling the shots and writing, producing and directing?
It's funny. I met my wife, later in late 2012 on a movie. She wasn't my wife at the time, but we were co-stars on this Western mm-hmm. called Redemption. And, we were shooting in Santa Fe, New Mexico, and I had a short film wrote that I wanted to do. And it was about a personal thing in my life, the loss of my grandfather, and he was my best friend. And so I just wanted to take a journey of life, mm-hmm. from the youth all the way to the age and just show the journey of life.
Yeah.
And, me and her were sitting there talking in between, lunch and sets throughout the shoot. And I said, you should read this. And she read it and she said, don't do a short. No one sees a short. And I said, well, I don't think that's true. And, she goes, well, just, you got so much time in it now, you should write a feature. And mm-hmm. so we set out and wrote a feature, and we opened up our business in 2014, Argentum Entertainment, and we raised the funds and we shot it in 2016 and took it theatrical. I mean, the whole nine yards. It had a great cast in it. It turned out really well, had great reviews, and it did really well. And I directed it. We created it and produced it. We did everything in house and we sold it out. And then from there, I produced and direct a few more, films and a few other little things, and a lot of commercials. And, mm-hmm. when we moved a company to Georgia a couple of years ago, Bi-Coastal now, it's been an incredible time. It's, we're production for hire here. I do a lot of directing, on the East Coast. And then I travel a lot for that as well. And, I still get the two loves, the directing and acting are my two loves. I love them both. I am a big fan of actor turned director and director mm-hmm. Being an actor. I think they complement each other very well. You understand the lingo and how to interact better with the cast and vice versa. And you understand just the body language and structure of the set better. And mm-hmm. so, and then put on top of owning a production company and being responsible for the money and all the other things, you can appreciate the value that goes into that and the resources needed to be able to facilitate it. And then how to facilitate when the resources aren't there. And so we've done it all. And some of the funnest, best times are on small sets because it's like a huge family. It's like a small family, you know, it's mm-hmm. like a small family. Everybody's chipping in, getting together, and you're creating and doing.
Definitely. I mean, that sounds great as well. You answered the question I was going to ask as well about that, about which you prefer, but obviously you love both. And a lot of people do. I've had quite a few people who've done both as well. And there is quite a lot of mixed reviews because some people don't like it and they don't like directors. You know, they don't like that sort of, they're not keen on a director turning to actor and stuff like that. Or, but I think it's what you've said is that's what I believe. I thought it would actually benefit and it would, you know, being a director first, then going into acting, you'd understand, you know, the both sides of things. Like you're looking at a beach ball, you know, you can have two sides of the beach ball. Both of you could be right. But just, you, when you play both parts, you can actually take that step back and it helps you grow. Because you'll be able to see things from the other point of view, from the other perspective. So when you go back to directing, you've got more of an understanding of what the act is. And likewise, when you've been directing, you go back to acting, you understand more of that background and apply it.
Yeah, I'm very much an actor's director. I love, you know, I do my work at casting, you know. Mm-hmm. And I remember having a conversation with one of my cinematographers. He kept asking me, he goes, why don't you ever go talk to the actors and stuff? I said, because I've already casted them. They know what they're doing. You know, they're going to show up. And because most of the stuff that we write in-house, we have about 7 intellectual properties that we really like right now and mm-hmm. we're pushing. And then outside of that, we're always chasing down new ideas and scripts. But when I start reading a character or I start building a character and stuff, I have people in mind for it already and the feel and the idea of it. And that way, when we go start going into casting and getting tapes coming in, I start looking for not just the sellability of the name, but more so the human factor within the character that I created and the honesty with it. If I can sit back going, there's that person or there she is, then my job, you know, 2/3 is done for that part of it. I've just checked off a big check mark and now I can, you know, and as long as I get the great team around me and stuff, it's such an enjoyable time. It's when you don't have the confidence of everybody around you that it comes a train wreck. And then you're just, you know, you put on your producer hat and your director mm-hmm. hat, and you control the situation and you make your days and you go in. But, you know, as an actor, I've always been intrigued the technology, cameras, and so mm-hmm. I know how to. I'm an editor. I do a lot of my rough ins, and then I send them out, and we sit in a room and stuff, and we deal with the better people and bigger names that can do it better. Right? Mm-hmm. But I like the tempo and get it roughed in, and because it's me as an actor, you know, I cut my own demo reels. I cut, you know, my wife's demo mm-hmm. reels. I do all this stuff because it helps me get the tempo and the transitions that work really well that I feel don't take you out of the equation or the character's mm-hmm. emotion. It keeps you engaged in it. And for being an actor going in there, because I want an actor director and and I love both of them. I think in both of them, I'm very lucky, knock on wood, to be able to do both still. You know, last year was incredible. This year is turning out to be really good and strong. So the only complaint I have, I don't do it enough. And I don't know if I could do it enough, to be honest with you, because I love it.
sounds fantastic. And being able to just, you know, live life and do and get those roles and get the work that you're coming into, something that you love so much and so passionate about, which obviously you can hear coming through. And I've spoken to lots of indie actors and independent film makers as well, who, you know, to release their films. And you're right, all they talk about is how much of a family it is. Actually, I was in one 4 years ago. I was I was an office worker because I was wanting to do acting when I was younger, Drew, but my parents kind of steered me away. Said it wasn't, you know, it's not a safe career. You look for something set, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I've ended up 20 years in IT, completely different to what I wanted to do. But a friend of ours is a director and they filmed a film. They did a film around here and they wanted an office worker. And I was like, well, I went as an extra. They gave me script. I actually had words. So I had a speaking part as well, which was shocking. And I loved it because they said 12 hours. I was there for 12 hours. And my scene, I think, was 20 minutes, as in, retakes and obviously refilming took 20 minutes. And they were apologizing to me, saying, I'm so, because obviously I had to wait to the end because my character died, nasty, horrible death. The end, it's like, I sat my hands cuffed behind my back on a concrete floor, cold concrete floor, for about an hour and a half while the cinematographer was making sure he could capture the light right to get the final light. And it was just like, I had to pretend they threw acid down on my bits down there, and obviously I pretend I was through back and smashed my head on the concrete floor, and they was like, that's really realistic, that's really good. I was like, it was real, that's why I was I said it was that real. I said it wasn't well acted. I literally smashed my head on the floor and I was like, oh.
Joe, you got so, one take, I got a concussion, take me to the hospital.
Yeah. But I loved it, that's what I loved seeing, because it was very close near. So I was sat back and I was just watching like the cinematographer at work throughout the day, capturing the different, you know, angles and the scenes, and watching how the producer and the director were going around. I just loved that whole, being part of that whole thing and seeing it from behind the scenes, because as someone like me, a normal viewer, you don't see that, obviously.
Yeah.
You know, so it was really fantastic just to see how things were made like that. It's good.
Well, I tell you, the most important thing about being on set is remember that it's a business. Every time is money. Right. And so as it's clicking away, you're spending money and it doesn't stop. And so it's respected as a business, just like anything else. It's a lot. Sometimes as actors and stuff, there's a lot of waiting and crew waits once the scene starts rolling and stuff, but crew's working, you know, behind the scenes to get it set up. Our job is to show up so it doesn't lag when we show up and be able to do it. So you spend, 7 hours a day getting everything set up, and then 3 to 4 hours a day shooting the day sequence out. But it's amazing. I'm what you see is what you get. I'm really a simple, easygoing guy, right? I don't believe in a flash and flare, and I don't, I'm not chasing down fame. If it happens, great. But if I'm not chasing down fame, I just want to be a working actor. That's why I started. I started acting when I was 30. I was in Tokyo, Japan, and I got a piece of a Dell's computer commercial spiking the ball into a green screen. And me and my translator would go to the camera department, and I just asked them a bunch of questions. And they had the old 35s back then. And I was a shy kid. I was like 25 years old, shy kid. And so I came back and I started opening up businesses. And in 5 years, I built 3 retail businesses and a full-blown construction company with partners. I woke up one day going, this is miserable. What am I doing? And I was just chasing money, and there's nothing wrong with chasing money, but I wasn't happy. I couldn't turn it off.
Yeah.
And I looked back on what made me, I was 30 years old. I looked back on what made me the happiest. And it was that moment in Tokyo, Japan on that set. And then I asked myself, can I do it? And I said, well, I didn't know anything about business, and that worked out. I just was stupid enough, put my head down, never looked up, and made a business, And so a couple weeks later, I made the decision. I walked in. I told my partners that I'm going to sell out my position, and I'm going to go chase a dream. And I've never looked back, and I think that's the beauty of it. If this is what you want. The best advice I've ever gotten, I was in LA. So I spent 11 years in LA, and I'm still back and forth constantly. But I spent 11 years when I first got there. I think it was coming off of Wire and Blood. I first got there, and I was reading for a Kelsey Grammer's series. And one of the casting directors says, all right, Drew, how long are you going to give yourself to make it? And I went, what? He goes, how long are you going to give yourself to make it? You give you 3 years, 5 years before you give up on this stuff? And I go, no, I'm going, I don't have a timeline. This is what I decided to do, and I'm doing it. Good, bad, or the ugly, I'm figuring it out. I figured out business. I'll figure this out. And I remember the casting director goes, right answer. He goes, because he said, I think it was, I forget who it was, But he said, if you'd have told me 3 to 5, I said, go do something else because your life would be a lot easier and you'll be a lot, mm-hmm. You'll have more wealth and you'll have a lot more, easy times and not so much stress and anxiety. And that really stuck with me. And so every time somebody asked me, I want to be an actor, I go, is there anything else you want to do in your life? And if they come up with something else, I go do that because you'll have a lot more fun doing that, probably more yeah. successful than this, because this is it's like the fours, right? It's the right place meeting. I forget what it all is. It's the right script, character, meeting, opportunity, meeting luck, and then meeting the stuff that you can't control. Mm-hmm. All these things that come around.
Yeah, it's that's actually really inspiring to hear as well, because it's something I know I've not missed the chance, because I'm still could do it if I wanted to, but that's why I do my show. Like I said before, it's like I know, you know, when I started out, I didn't think of, you know, obviously going here, still 7 years on, but for me, you know, I was like, but I'm it's yeah, I don't care. I love doing this. Financially, I can't do it full time because I'm kind of single income, and unfortunately, that's for me. That's that little leap I can't make. But it's yeah.
Well, you got beachfront property, man. You got a
almost yeah. So yeah, it's just yeah that one leap. But I keep doing this because it's something I love doing this, and I won't give it up. People do tell me this, so why don't you just give it up? It's like, you know, because like you've just said, well, you know, when you're going to be famous, blah, blah. It's like, I don't care if I'm famous or not. I like doing this because it brings enjoyment to me. It brings enjoyment to people, some people who listen and watch. And it's like, it's got me down to London. It's got me doing things that I never thought I'd do. I was, you know, for example, not blabbering on about me, but I've been down in London, like with independent films. I've hosted their premieres and done Q&A in front of like 300 people in the cinema because I was invited to do that. Because I brought them on the show and they was, you know, we sort of became part of that little family. And so I was ended up doing, you know, I never would have dreamt of doing, but I have standing on stage with a mic in front. I used to love theatre, but standing in the mic, I rattled off the Blues Brothers, you know, good evening, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the, you know, that bit. I did that, but with changed the words to be that where we were at the time. And it was sent goosebumps down me now, because I just remember how excited and happy it made me feel. And so speaking to actors like you, hearing these stories, you know, I'd do this forever if I wanted to.
I'll tell you right now, and if you ever want to, just do it. You know, jump in, just do it. Find a local theater, find local like filmmakers and writers and stuff. Because technology has come such a long way that go out there, shoot something, build something, you know, design something. Take first movie I ever did. It's a bad D horror movie at best, right? But it was a group of 10 people that was the actors, directors, producers, writers, locations. We did everything. And it was a $3,500 movie because we bought, and it was SD. It was a Canon SD camera. Yeah. We bought the camera, but we learned how to edit. We learned how to do sound. We learned all this stuff. Mm-hmm. We learned to do special effects together. Yeah. And for $3,500, we made this movie. And then a sales agent found it. They bought it. They took it around the world. And they came back to us and said, hey, can you make us another one? This is literally. And I found that. And don't ever do this, people out there. Don't ever look on Facebook and find locations. No, Craigslist. It was on Craigslist at the time. So I went on Craigslist and I found an opportunity. I didn't know. I'm a dyslexic actor. Mm-hmm. I didn't know. I was a blubbering idiot reading out loud with paper in my hand. But then when I realized it wasn't about memorization, it was about listening and responding and stuff. Now I can you give me 5 pages in 15 minutes, I'll be off book. You know, it's been this incredible journey personally for me, learning about myself. Mm-hmm. But also the first thing I ever did for $3,500, we sold it, and then they came back and said, make us another one, but dump more blood. So we made another one for $1,500 because we spent special effects. You know, cauliflowers or brains blown out of, you know, we're doing this whole, we're just creating stuff. Yeah. And it would have never happened if I would have never just took a chance on myself and said, hey, let's go see where it goes. And being open, you know, the other thing is just be open. Don't be so entitled. Just enjoy your life, enjoy the journey. And who knows, you may decide that being in front of the camera is not the place you really want to be. You want to be in behind the camera, because that It's a team. A team creates what your end result. It's not just the people that you see on camera and stuff. It takes an army of people that, and rightly so, deserve a lot of the credit just as much as the people in front of it.
Yeah.
And we never stop to think about that much. And so there's so many opportunities, so many great things. It's just, where do you want your stress level? Where do you want your enjoyment? Where it makes you happy?
Exactly. I did do a little film. My son did it a couple of years back when he was about 11 or 12. And he did one on the beach, not our beach. It was a little, when we go a bit further away to a nicer beach. And he did this with his friend called Marooned. And he did it for a local film festival. And he actually came, he won. Basically, they'd fallen off a ferry, fallen off a cruise ship, and it was just him and his friend. And they, you know, I filmed all just on an iPhone, like you said, technology. I filmed it on an iPhone, and I did the video, did some sound editing with him afterwards. I showed him how to do a little bit of that. Not an expert, so I was just fiddling and showed him what we can do, edit a bit. And he ended up winning. It was only like a 10 minute little film, but he loved it. So I'm trying. Yeah. There's lots of, like you say, the technology is there. You can just pick up a phone now and just go out and make a film if you wanted to.
Yeah,
obviously, you know, like a budget one.
The biggest thing about production is that you have to be responsible for the money. You know, if a bunch of friends are getting together and not doing it, then the money is not really the responsibility anymore. It's just you guys creating the best product that you possibly can. Yeah. And like you said, there's really no excuse anymore, because in post you can fix a lot of the audio, you know, and everything else. You can the coloring and as long as you can capture, you know, physically capture the image that you're trying to, and it's not too dark, or it's not too blown out, and you can capture audio tracks. You can go back and ADR them in, and I've done it in my closet and with a sheet over my head, you know, talking into my iPhone and sending it back in. It's amazing how creative you are is how that product's going to turn out. You know, and it's a collective thing. And so you just rely on your friends and your family members and everybody around you. And you just do it, because if you wait until it's perfect, you'll never get it done. You'll never get it done. Sometimes you just got to set the date and say, this is where we're going, and backtrack.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Totally with it. I totally agree. Cause just go out and step and be brave and take that step.
Yeah.
Fantastic. We're talking about all this time. We're actually going to talk about your film that you're doing, Desperate Riders. That's a new one that's coming out. Tell me Tell me a bit about that for me, please, Drew.
Well, I mean, Desperate Riders, we shot that last February, actually. We had this huge snowstorm come through. We shot it up in Tennessee. Trace Atkins, Tom Berenger, and just a list of other great cast members. But it's funny. I love westerns. I'm a Texas boy. I ride. I rope. I grew up breaking horses. I just horses are my spirit animals. Horses and dogs. But I got an opportunity. Michael Pfeiffer was producer director on this one, and I've worked with him in the past on a few projects. And he called and asked me, "Hey, you want to play lead in this?" I'm like, "Yeah, I get to ride horses. Are you kidding me? Absolutely." And so I jumped in. And, you know, it's one of those kind of grungy, unforgiven westerns that I've been dying to do. But the funny thing is we're up in Tennessee shooting this thing. First week, it's 68 degrees, gorgeous. Second week, the blizzard comes in, drops 13 inches of snow. And so, we had to rewrite the script to make it feel like we went up into the mountains so we could live in the snow for a week. And then, we're building fires, we're doing all this stuff. And then third week, all the snow's melting, so we go back to creation. But it's a lot of fun. It's a great little story. Trace Atkins plays the antagonist, and I play the guy chasing him down. So it should be good. We're excited. Lionsgate's taking it out February 25th. They're going to do a theatrical run on it.
Oh, nice.
So we'll see how that goes, and if it does well, they'll keep taking it out, and then it should be on demand and all the streaming platforms shortly after that.
Fantastic. That sounds like great fun, especially I say Texas, you get to do the thing that you've always wanted to do. It's like doing some good old cowboy work.
I've made my career doing back with the four C's.
Oh, yeah, I've seen that.
Cowboys and captains.
It's fantastic. And as I say, I mean, you know, it's just, I love a good Western as well. I really do. My dad was always a big fan of Westerns. My wife, I can't watch them now because my wife doesn't really watch them much. So I kind of watch them in secret. Because my dad has always raised me on, Clint Eastwood and, stuff like that. It's just the man with no name. And there's just spaghetti Westerns were some of the best. And,
oh, I got two scripts coming. I can't wait to start reading them just for that purpose, because I want to do another Western. And this time we're going to produce it and direct it. But I'm excited. I've already started scouting. I've already put my team together. I'm getting excited about it.
Fantastic. Fantastic. You've also in a series, which I know you have been filming, which is Love and Death, which is... Yeah. Yeah, it's got Scarlet Witch in it, Elizabeth Olsen. she's great, isn't she?
Yeah. My goodness, man. She's, you want to talk about very well trained and executed actress. She is unbelievable. She's like watching a masterclass on set. She really is. And then I get to work with Jesse Plemons again and Brad Leland again. Mm-hmm. Another great cast. But we've been shooting it. We started shooting that back in October. It's a 7-series arc for HBO. It's based on a true story about a murder that took place in the 80s in Wiley, Texas. The funny thing about Wiley, Texas, when I got out of the military, I moved to Saxey, Texas, which is right next to Wiley, Texas. This is Saxey than Wiley, and there may be an eighth of a mile in the center.
Yeah. All right. Okay.
And so I heard people talking about it, but I never really paid much attention to it. Yeah. And now
you're doing a film about it. Series. Yeah.
We just started back up episode 105 and I go back in on episode 106.
All right. Okay. Excellent. That sounds really good. And it's, I'd like to watch that. I like Elizabeth Olsen and the way you've talked about her there and how professional she is. It sounds fantastic. I've seen clips of her with the humor for the Austin with the Avengers and stuff like that, and it's brilliant. But to hear that, you can see her professionalism when she's on, dedication. So
it's a big production, and of course, COVID and stuff, we're taking the proper precautions and all that, but it slows it down a little bit. But overall, this is a seasoned cast and crew, and everything is working like clockwork. It is so well run and it's so relaxed. Leslie, our director, she's the captain of the ship, and she is just, she's so incredibly enjoyable to be around. It's hard to explain the energy that she brings to that set. And I think every great director, which she is that's what they do well, is they bring an energy to the set and then everybody feeds off of it.
Fantastic. I think that's what it's like that in any business, really. If someone's got the energy, they'll bring it in. I remember this guy who's on Django Unchained with Tarantino's.
Yeah.
And he was Chris Berry. He was one of the cowboys in one of the ranches, I think, at the time. But he said, he goes, it didn't matter who you were. He's a guest. He goes, Tarantino, the end for the energy. Tarantino came on every morning and people were just sitting there having their coffee, waking up. And the guy, apparently he came bouncing in, massive grin. Everyone dancing around. We're making a movie today. Woohoo! And he's like, and that's and spurred them on that way. Just like, and they said, everyone just fed off that energy as well. So to have someone to sort of the cast like Elizabeth, I think Lucifer is another one where you got Tom, people like those guys, and they just bring that energy in, and everyone else just like feeds and boosts in and brings your own energy, and it just makes something special at the end of the day.
Listen, it's hard enough to put one together, and get it to the finish line. It's the lead up to it. Sometimes you get lucky and you can turn around and hit one in 6 months, or it may take 20 years, or it may never get done. But once it's your baby and you're locked in, it's your passion and stuff. And so you might as well have fun doing it, because that's why you enjoy doing it. You show up to do what you love to do. So don't show up bitter, or you're just reserved, set back from everybody. Unless it's your character, unless it's your
father,
a lot of people it is. But if your character doesn't, if it's not needed or awarded for your character, and you're just doing it, I feel like people miss out on so much. Mm-hmm. I've had some incredible opportunities to have conversations with well-seasoned, you know, actors and actresses and directors and producers and camera operators. Just take the time and don't get in their space when they're working or when they get stuff done. But when you see a little downtime, man, have a conversation with them, because you not only you'll learn something, knowledge will grow, but you may build a friend out of it.
Well, yeah, exactly.
This industry is all about knowing and friendship. Okay.
Yeah, they always say it's who you know and who you know. That's how half my show's got, to be honest. The way I've done it is a lot of it's word of mouth. Like, I mean, I'm interviewing you and I'm really glad I've managed to speak to you finally. Because it was through Rick Perez, it's like people you know, and you sort of, my show gets built up because people just, you know, come around and go to these little events and, you know, meet people, and like you say, film sets, and you meet people, then it means for future projects for yourself as an actor. It's like, oh, yeah, someone might say, oh, actually, I remember Drew was really good on that. Let's bring him in.
Hey, I hope.
Fantastic.
I'm vaccinated. I have passport. Will travel. So just.
Yeah, I'm triple jabbed with my passport as well. I've got my little COVID passport even too. I know. Hopefully won't be too much longer. I've just realized, looking at the time, and like I said to you before, I did joke about it being an hour, and it was actually an hour. We just had so much fun chatting to you. Is there any, I mean, you've got a few other projects as well, what are coming out as well? When I say you've got projects,
I got a few more television series coming out. I have a few that I'm out in right now that waiting to hear back. Hopefully, one would hit that I just sent out for. But we have some on the production side we're really excited about. We have a Christmas movie that we're very close on. I was saying is going to shoot in Ireland if it goes. Mm-hmm. We have a co-writer over there that we met at Cannes about 5 years ago, and we just built this friendship. That's another thing. We took our last film to Cannes about 5 years ago, and we took our investors and stuff and just did the whole thing. Mm-hmm. And me and my wife hit the red carpet for a showing. We're decked to the hills, and we snuck out a little early. It was subtitled, and it was hard for me to read it. So I was like, let's go. And so we went to a little restaurant area on the little alleyway area. Mm-hmm. And we're sitting there eating, drinking a little wine. And all of a sudden, behind us, you just hear a group of guys just cutting up, having the best time, right? And waiter comes, taps me on the shoulder, and hands us over two shots, and he goes, from the, you know, the blokes back there. And I turned around and I said, cheers, guys. And they said, we're so sorry. Looks like we're ruining your night. We are so apologetic, you know, blah, blah, blah. And we ended up spending the rest of the night with them, and they own a production company in Ireland. And so we just started collaborating on things, and the dynamics of the humor and the way they write versus the American side of the way we write, it translates very well. And so we're excited about
Nice.
We have coming up with them.
And it's only a 30-minute ferry ride from Ireland to North Wales, where I am. So, depends on part of Ireland, I suppose. Yeah.
Come on over, we'll put you in. I'll give you a couple of speaking lines. Let's go.
See, I've got that recorded now. I'm going to take you over. Excellent. Is there anything before I sort of stop the recording, Drew? Is there anything you'd like to say to people who are watching or listening to this right now?
Listen, thanks for watching. Thanks for being a part of, you know, entertainment and social media and keeping people aware of what's going on, first and foremost. And everybody out there, go out and see something, you know, be a part of it. The entertainment industry and the arts, we need it. We need it in our lives just to break up the monotony and the stress level. We need to laugh, cry, and be angry at something else in the world. So go out there and support it. Be a part of it. If you have time and it's near you, check it out. They have Desperate Writers coming out February 25th. Lionsgate's taking it out. You'll see this ugly mug.